One of the greatest obstacles to crafting health and wellness is identifying and controlling inflammation. It's at the core of all complex and chronic diseases, and is the driving mechanism that underlies the most common symptoms that people like you struggle to overcome. Join us as we explore cutting-edge science and research to give you the information and tools you need to create the quality of life you want and deserve. And now, here is the host of Inflammation Nation, Dr. Stephen Noseworthy.
Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. This is part 3 of a mini-series I'm calling Embracing Strength. And we're talking about resistance training. Today we're going to be talking about determining sets and repetitions for optimal outcomes. So in the last podcast, I went through some of the lingo used in exercise science, and we talked about the different adaptations that you can trigger when you design your resistance program properly. And remember that you get to choose if you grow bigger muscles or not, right? You get to choose to focus on, say, developing strength at the expense of muscular endurance or vice versa. Or you can choose the general approach and develop some degree of capacity and competence in all of those different adaptations, right? You can get a little bit stronger. You can add a little bit more muscle and improve your muscular endurance. You can do all of it with one workout program. So today, I want to go through the concepts of sets and repetitions. I want to distinguish between warm-up sets and working sets. And I want to talk about the minimal effective dose to accomplish your goals, right? In other words, like, what's the least amount of time that you can spend in the gym or lifting weights at home to improve your health? And remember, while you need to use resistance training to build your body, you're not necessarily trying to be a bodybuilder, if that makes sense, right? The last thing I want you to do is to see some internet video from like a fitness influencer talking about their programming or their nutrition plan, and for you to assume that to get anything out of lifting that you have to do exactly what they do, right? Don't lose sight of your goals, and don't assume that you need to copy what amounts to, in most cases, advanced level training when in fact you're probably a beginner, or maybe you're someone who used to lift and haven't for a long time, and now you're coming back. So like back in the 1980s and 90s, before everything went digital, there were magazines like, you might remember these, Muscle, depending on your age, of course, but there were Muscle and Fitness magazines, or Flex or Shape, and these magazines would feature the workout routines of professional bodybuilders for the most part. And the average Joe or the average Jill would read these magazines and try to copy the workouts of the pros and wonder why they couldn't walk for 2 weeks after their first workout if they got through it at all, right? So I'm coming at this topic from the perspective of the average person who wants to be healthy and fit and really isn't interested in being a bodybuilder, although you are building your body, and you're, you know, probably not interested in committing to working out twice a day or working out for 2 hours at a time, 7 days a week, with or without pharmaceutical enhancement. And listen, you can choose to not follow any of my advice here on any of these podcast episodes, but realize that once you hear the information, and if you choose to do nothing, you need to know that doing nothing is an action with consequences, right? If you choose to not add resistance training to your weekly habits, or thinking back to our series on smart cardio, if you choose not to do those, it's not just that you miss out on what lifting or resistance training and cardio training can do for you, but you actually pay the price over time because of the inevitable loss of your VO2 max, the loss of muscle mass. And what comes with that is the loss of strength and power. And these things are associated with lack of quality of life and reduced longevity. Right? I don't know how else to say it. So remember the last episode, I borrowed a quote from Andy Galpin, who said that most people want to look good, feel good, play good. And I tossed this around in my head and came up with my own version of that, which makes sense to me. And that is that we all need to lift weights and do smart cardio for form, function, and freedom. Form, function, and freedom. So why form? Well, because everybody wants to look good, right? I can't really think of any exceptions. Everybody wants to look good. And the pathway to your best physique is laid with the bricks of smart cardio and resistance training. Form is about aesthetics, And it's about feeling good in your own skin. There's nothing wrong with that. And as Dr. Brad Schoenfeld said, who doesn't want to look great naked? In fact, I'm pretty sure he's got a book exactly with that title, Look Great Naked. So form, function, and freedom. So why function? Well, being functional means that you have enough strength and stamina to meet the demands of your routine activities of daily living, just simply doing the things that you're responsible for yourself and for other people, but also having plenty of capacity left over to engage at recreation at some satisfactory level. And, you know, whether that means playing with your grandkids or a long walk in the park on the weekend or joining the Wednesday night pickleball league, right? Life imposes physical demands that you either meet or you don't. It's that simple. So form, function, and then finally freedom. This is the ability to age gracefully and with the independence that you want so that you're free from the restrictions that, say, 90% of elderly people simply accept as a fact of life. So form, function, and freedom, that's what you're after. And you use smart cardio and you use resistance training to accomplish those things. All right, so let's clarify a few more terms. This won't take long. Once you choose your goals and you settle on using mostly compound exercises rather than isolation exercises, we talked about that last time, the next thing is to settle on sets and repetitions or sets and reps. A rep or a repetition is one iteration of an exercise or a movement. So if I'm thinking of a bodyweight squat, but we could easily think about a push-up or a pressing movement. But if I'm thinking about a bodyweight squat where I'm standing up, I bend my hips and my knees and I squat down and then I straighten up again to a standing position, that's one repetition. And if I squat down and up twice, that's two repetitions or two reps and so on. And so a rep is one iteration of a movement or an exercise, no matter what the exercise is. A collection of repetitions done without stopping or with minimal pauses is what we call a set. So a set is made up of a number of repetitions. It could be one repetition. You could do one set of one rep. It could be two repetitions. It could be 15 or 20. So you can do one or two or three sets or more of any number of different repetitions. But we have reps and we have sets. And sets are made up of a given number of repetitions. And when we think about workouts or workout sessions, these are made up of multiple sets of specific reps for whichever exercises that you have chosen. That's how they all interrelate. So exercise programs then include not just the exercise selection, but a prescription for sets and reps for each chosen movement. So I might say that, you know, today for me is actually a heavy leg exercise day. So I might be doing a 3x5 squat workout. And that means I'm going to do three sets of five repetitions of, say, a squatting movement or a squatting variation. So 3x5. Or I might say that I'm doing 4x12 pushups, where I do four sets of 12 reps of a pushup. And, you know, in almost all cases, trainers express sets first, followed by reps or repetitions. So again, 5x5 is five sets of five reps, 3x10 is three sets of 10 reps, and so on. And that should be pretty easy. And I think most people have some familiarity with that jargon or with that lingo. But if I say that I'm going to do three sets of 10 reps, say of a squat, for example, we could use leg press, doesn't matter. But if I say I'm going to do three sets of 10 reps of a squat, those three sets designate what we call working sets, which do not include your warm-up sets. And so we have to distinguish between working sets and warm-up sets. So a working set is a set that's taken close to failure, regardless of the weight you're using or the repetitions that you're shooting for. And by close to failure, I mean, say, within three, perhaps four reps of true failure where you can't lift the weight one more time. And so just to be clear, because I know I've said, you know, we've talked about reps in reserve, and I said, you know, three reps close to failure. But, you know, some experts actually go up to five, right? Some say you need to get within five reps of failure. Others say four. I personally use three reps in reserve. So I'm getting within three reps of failure for me to count something as a working set. But again, you can count it at four. And so why don't we just actually agree for the sake of this discussion today that we're going to use any set taken to within four reps of failure is something we're going to count as a working set. Remember, a working set is a set that's taken closer to failure, regardless of the weight you're using or the repetitions that you're shooting for. And right, you might remember we've talked about this concept of reps in reserve before. If I can lift a weight eight times and eight times only, but I stop at eight, I'm sorry, did I say that wrong? Let me say it one more time. If I can lift a weight 10 times, but I stop at eight, I leave two reps in reserve. And that counts as a working set. So any set where you have more than five or more reps in reserve, that's a warm-up set. It's not a working set because you're not close enough to failure for it to count as work. So any set of four or fewer reps in reserve is a working set, and it fulfills one set of your workout prescription. So again, if I'm aiming to do three sets of 10, I have to do at least six repetitions on each of my sets to call them working sets. Otherwise, it's just simply a warm-up. And I'm going to give you example after example just to make sure that you get these concepts, because this is important, because it's the working sets that deliver the adaptations. This is why this part of the conversation is important. So if my goal is to do three sets of 10 reps of a leg press, if in my first set I stop at 10, but I could do at least five more reps, that's not a working set, it's a warm-up set. And, you know, to be honest, since I'm on the topic, you should be doing at least two, perhaps three warm-up sets before you start your working sets. That's going to vary from person to person. How old are you? How stiff are you? Do you have anything, you know, injuries or tweaky areas that you need to work around and warm up more than others? You know, back in my younger days, I could just jump into a workout with no warm-up and just start working sets, but I can't do that anymore. I need to, in fact, it takes me longer to warm up to get to my working sets than it did, you know, 15, 20 years ago. It's okay. That's just the way life is. My point is you have to warm up first, then you have to get into your working sets. How do we distinguish between the two of them? And that's where this concept of getting close to failure and reps in reserve comes into play. So let's use a concrete example. I just mentioned the leg press. So again, I'm just taking simple numbers. Say that I want three working sets of 10 repetitions of a leg press, but I know I need to do at least two warm-up sets. So let's say I'm just fresh in the gym and my very first set is a warm-up set. I could choose a lightweight that maybe I know I can do for, say, 15 or even 20 reps. And let's say that I do 8 or 10 and I'm leaving a whole bunch of reps in reserve. That's my warm-up set, or at least one warm-up set. It doesn't count as a working set because I have five or more reps in reserve. And for maybe my second warm-up set, maybe I add a little bit of weight, so I go slightly heavier than my first warm-up set, but I don't go as heavy as my first working set. But whatever weight that is, I still leave at least five reps in the tank. I don't want to keep pushing that weight to failure because it's a warm-up set. It's not a working set. So when I choose the weight for my first working set, which in this example is my third total set, right? Two warm-ups plus my first working set. Let's say on this first working set, my goal is to hit 10 repetitions with whatever weight I have, but I can stop at six. As long as I leave only four reps in reserve, I can stop at seven. I can leave three reps in reserve. I can stop at eight and leave two reps in reserve. All of those are working sets because I'm within that rule of being four or less reps in reserve. But if on my first working set, just let's say that I make a mistake and I choose a weight that's too light, and I can actually do 12 reps instead of 10. If I only do six reps, but I could do 12 with that particular weight, that's just another warm-up set because I have six reps in reserve, which is more than the four that defines our criteria for a working set. On the contrary, if on my first working set, I choose a weight that's actually heavier than what I can do for 10 repetitions, and let's say I can only do eight with that particular weight, I kind of overshot. As long as I can get anywhere from four to eight repetitions, that counts as a working set, even though I overshot, right? I know that whatever weight I chose is heavier than my goal, but it still counts as a working set because I leave four or less reps in reserve. So the key to remember, if you're following a workout program, no matter where you get it, and it says to do three sets of exercise A for any given number of reps, you have to come within four reps of failure for that set to count. Otherwise, it's a warm-up set and it doesn't count as a working set. And what that means then is that as you get started, you know, you probably don't know what your capacity is. Most beginners don't. For any exercise, you probably don't have any idea what weights you would choose to lift 5 times or 10 times or 15 times. And so in the beginning, you have to be willing to spend a few workout sessions, perhaps a few weeks, getting to know your limits, to know what it means to give 100% effort for any lift, and to know what true failure feels like. Beginners and newbies, they don't know what that 100% effort feels like. So, you know, they quite often either overshoot or undershoot. Now, I've been lifting long enough to know what it feels like to be within a few reps of failure. So even if I do something new that I've never done before, it doesn't take me very long at all to figure out where that line is for me between a warm-up set and a working set. I know this intuitively because I've done it for so many years. So my advice for you is to be patient, right? The first few weeks of a new program should be you finding your capacity and learning that feeling of being close to failure, but not at failure. And my advice to anyone starting out is be conservative here, right? There's no rush to find your ideal weights or your maximum effort. Do a few extra warm-up sets if you have to make sure you don't accidentally choose a weight that's too heavy for you, and then you tweak something lifting something heavier than you should, right? Start low and go slow. Like I said, it doesn't take long to figure out what your capacity is, but you do have to invest the time and be patient. And in the beginning, it's far better to undershoot and come back the next time with a better understanding of what weight you should choose than to overshoot early and have to take time off because you know you're too sore or you've tweaked something. So at least 2 warm-up sets before you try for your first working set, and give yourself a few weeks to figure out what your current capacity is and to learn when you're in the sweet spot of being within 4 reps of failure and being able to count that set as a working set. And again, I also recommend, you know, because working sets are defined as anything within 4 reps of failure, like 4 reps in reserve. So you can go 4 reps in reserve, 3 reps in reserve, 1 rep in reserve, or 0, which is true failure. But I would suggest that if you're beginning, that you shoot to stop all of your working sets at 4 reps in reserve. Again, it's going to take you some time to figure out, you know, what that feels like. But start at the lower end, give yourself more left in the tank on every working set. And do this maybe for at least the first month. Like, don't shoot for 2 reps in reserve or 1 rep reserve, and certainly don't shoot for true failure. That's not really necessary. And we'll talk about that coming up here in a second. Right? As you accumulate experience and your body starts to adapt, then you can bring yourself closer to failure. Since leaving 1 rep in reserve is more demanding than leaving 4 reps in reserve, give yourself time and space to develop your capacity and your understanding of what 100% effort looks like or feels like before you start to push closer and closer to failure. But the more experience you have, the closer to failure you should go. But it begs the question, which is really kind of the same topic, and this is actually very critical, is to ask the question, like, do you need to go all the way to failure at any point to get results? Right? Remember that true failure, having 0 reps in reserve, is not being able to perform a single additional repetition. Right? Your muscles are so fatigued from the work that you simply can't do one more. And also remember that some exercises are inherently safer to push to failure than others. So for example, any machine or cable version of an exercise is inherently safer to push to your maximum than a free weight version of the same exercise, because the weight is typically controlled by the machine itself. For example, a leg press or a hip sled, where you sit in kind of a modified chair and you push your legs against resistance, but you're not standing on your own 2 legs with a weight on your back, a leg press or a hip sled is inherently safer to push to failure than a barbell back squat. And a machine chest press or bench press is inherently safer to push to failure than a barbell bench press. And for that matter, push-ups work the same upper body pushing muscles and are very safe to take to failure, because like, if you can't do a push-up, all you do is collapse a few inches down to the floor. if you ever choose to use free weights to push to failure, make sure you have a spotter. Make sure you have a partner who can help you as you begin to struggle. This is imperative, and I cannot stress it enough. And I don't say this to dissuade you from using free weights like dumbbells or barbells. They have tremendous value. But if you have questions about your ability to do something that has any risk at all, then just don't. You know, find a machine version and push yourself closer to failure. Just make sure you're smart, make sure you're safe. Now, isolation exercises are safer to push to failure because they're technically less demanding, meaning it requires less technique, right? So, for example, there's less technique to sit on a machine and push your legs against resistance in a leg press than it is to stand up, put a barbell on your back, and to squat down under your own power with an extra weight on top of you. So free weight, barbell, back squats, deadlifts, etc., these require more technique and skill than sitting in a machine and doing the same type of movement. So, like, having said all that, you need to know where failure is and how close you are to that. But the question is, let me reiterate, do you need to go to failure to get results? If you stop shy of failure and leave 3 or 4 reps in reserve, have you wasted your time? And the answer is no. In fact, this is, again, where the concept of reps in reserve came from, because research shows that as long as you are close to failure, you get essentially the same results without the risk of failing and risking injury, especially if you're doing something that is technically more complex and more demanding, like a squat versus, like a barbell back squat versus a leg press or a hip sled. But you're going to hear people talking online all the time about taking sets to failure. But understand that in many cases, they're probably talking about what's required for advanced lifters who need any and every trick in the book to eke out even a small 1% improvement in results. If you're a beginner or a novice, you don't need to push that hard, right? In fact, that might be detrimental because it requires so much more in terms of recovery capacity. I'm just assuming for the moment that if you're listening to the Inflammation Nation podcast, that's because you have metabolic issues and your physical recovery capacity might be a little bit compromised. And this is a good time to remind you about this wonderful thing called newbie gains, right? The phenomena where someone who is new to lifting or hasn't lifted for a very long time can experience gains with a level of effort that really would do nothing for an advanced lifter. And we, you know, maybe define an advanced lifter as someone who's got at least 2, maybe 3 or more years of continuous training. So in other words, the more advanced you are in lifting, the more you have to push the envelope to get any changes at all. But newbies can do almost anything and improve for a time, right? There is a limit in that newbie gains last for about a year of consistent training, right? So if you get to the point, and hopefully you do, where you've been training consistently for a year, just doing fundamentals and basics, and you want to keep improving beyond that, that's when you have to get a little bit more focused and increase your training effort, maybe your volume and intensity, to continue to get better, right? So that, again, that usually means more volume, more intensity, and then working closer to failure on at least one set, usually your last. And these are techniques that you don't necessarily have to do within that first year. So the answer is no. You don't have to train to failure, but you have to come close, again, within 4 reps or so, and that will give you the same benefit without the potential risk that going to failure might pose in certain circumstances. Now, one more concept, and then we'll talk about how to put working sets and reps together to accomplish different adaptations, and we might actually have to push that to the next episode. All right, this final concept is about progression. And what is, and you've probably heard this term before, it was called progressive overload. Many people who are lifting are basically, you know, they do the same exercises with the same set and rep scheme using the same weight week after week after week, and nothing changes. And listen, that might be fine if you're already at a point where you're happy with your muscle mass, you're happy with your strength, happy with your endurance, and you're simply trying to maintain what you have. That's totally fine. Here's an example. I had a conversation with one of my one-on-one coaching clients a couple months ago, and she was working with a personal trainer that she had hired in her local gym, and she was basically lamenting the fact that she wasn't adding any muscle and she wasn't getting stronger. And that was the very reason why she was lifting and hired a trainer. And when I asked her what the trainer had her doing, she was doing a full body circuit, which I have no problem with, doing that twice a week, I think it was. And she was doing a combination of machines and free weights. Again, no problem there. But she had only ever done three sets of 12 reps with pretty much the same weight for over a year. In other words, there was no progression. And this is where, you know, that old definition of insanity comes into play. You know, the one that says insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. So I asked her when the last time her trainer had changed something, either used a heavier weight or added an additional set, anything. And she said, never, right? She was doing the same program a year after she first started. She was very consistent, but she said she didn't notice any progress after the first month or two of training. She was stagnant for close to a year. And you know, what's more than that, in none of these three sets of 12 reps that she did for all her exercises, never did she feel like she was within four reps of failure. She never struggled to complete any set of any exercise, and said on many of her lifts, she could probably do 20 reps, even though they always stopped at 12, even though she could do more. So in other words, she was just going through the motions, right? Lifting the same weights the same way all the time. Now, needless to say, as a result of our conversation, she got very irritated at her trainer, and she, you know, said that she felt like she had pretty much wasted a year in the gym. And granted, she could have gotten better results, but it's not like there was no value in what she was doing. It just wasn't serving her goals. So she either had to change her goals and be satisfied where she was, or she had to change her training if she was going to continue to pursue her goals of adding some muscle and adding physical strength. So what is progressive overload? What does it look like? Why is it important? Well, it's actually quite simple, right? If you don't change the stimulus to your muscles, you will hit a threshold where nothing will change until you do something different, either by adding working sets, doing more work, or by adding weight, which usually means you have to reduce your repetitions, right? Because we can lift lighter weights for more repetitions, heavier weights for fewer, or, you know, simply she could simply take the current weights and exercise she was doing and increase her reps and get closer to failure. So instead of stopping at 12, keep going until you're within three or four reps of failure. So progressive overload is about getting the most out of what you're currently doing, but expecting that in a period of weeks or so, you should be capable of doing more. I mean, it's actually a really good sign that your programming is good and your performance and recovery is good if every week or so you're lifting, you're hitting personal records, whether that's in heavier weights, more repetitions with the same weight. It can look, you know, different ways. So if you can only lift 20 pounds today, progressive overload says that you should be trying to lift 21 pounds or more within a reasonable period of time, or lifting that 20 pounds for more repetitions and using more working sets. And newbies experience significant strength gains early on because everything they do is new and different. But even newbies eventually tap out the potential of their current programming and need to progressively challenge themselves to keep improving. So it's not unusual for newbies to experience significant strength gains in the first few months of consistent, well-programmed training. They really don't have to think much about creating progression since it just seems to happen automatically. And it's not unusual for them to be stronger every week on key lifts, assuming that they're recovering well. But again, there comes a point where you have to change your programming to keep getting better, because as you accumulate experience with resistance training, it takes more effort to get smaller gains. And that's the conundrum of the more advanced lifter. But remember, you as a newbie, I'm going to assume, you've got a year of consistent training before you have to worry about it. And as a newbie, if you're not seeing regular improvements every month or perhaps even less, you're in a rut and you need to change something. So what does that look like? Well, for simplicity's sake, let's say that you're doing an exercise where you're using three working sets of 10 repetitions. And you know what I mean by a working set now, within four reps of failure on each of those three sets. Anything else is a warm-up. So maybe when you start out, you do get 10 repetitions on your first working set. And maybe on the next one, you get 9. And maybe on the third, you get seven, because as you continue doing these working sets, you're starting to fatigue. And it's not unusual to not do three sets of 10, but to do a set of nine or a set of 10, a set of nine, a set of seven, or something like that. And that's great, right? You keep lifting, and over time, eventually, you can do three full sets of 10 repetitions instead of, say, 10, 9, and 7. That's perfect. Once you can complete three full sets of 10, or whatever your prescription is, and at the end of that third set, you feel like maybe you could squeeze out one or two on the last set, then it's time to progress. It's time to incrementally challenge yourself. So you can either add a little bit of weight, knowing that you won't be able to lift that slightly heavier weight for three full sets of 10 reps anymore, but maybe you can do three sets of seven with the heavier weight. So now you do three sets of seven, and eventually you can do three sets of eight with the new weight, and eventually you can get three sets of 10 with the new slightly heavier weight. This is progressive overload. Alternatively, another way to do it is, instead of adding weight, you can add either sets or repetitions, right? So let's say, again, you get to the point where you can complete three full sets of 10 reps on an exercise, but maybe you don't want to add weight because strength isn't your primary goal anymore. You can either add volume by adding a fourth working set, so shooting for four sets of 10, or you can add volume by adding repetitions. So instead of doing three sets of 10 reps, once you can do that, maybe you set a new goal, and your goal now is to use the same weight where you lift three full sets of 12 repetitions, perhaps 15 repetitions, right? And that's where you start to develop muscular endurance, when you're lifting the same weight for more repetitions. So again, progressive overload can look different depending on what your goal is. If it's to get stronger, generally, you add weight and reduce your reps per set and make sure you get close to failure. Or if your goal is hypertrophy, you can add an extra set or more and increase the number of working sets that you use. Or you can focus on endurance and you can lift the same weight for more repetitions. You get to decide. It depends on what you're looking for. So with the lady that I just mentioned, who was stuck doing that same workout for a year, I asked her to talk to her trainer and make it very clear that she had two goals. I want to get stronger and add some muscle. And I helped her understand that this meant a few things. She needed to lift weights heavier than what she had been using with a repetition scheme that develops strength. That is the only way to develop stronger muscles, essentially lift heavier weights. It's going to take fewer reps because we can only lift heavier weights fewer times than we can lift a lighter weight. It also meant that she had to reduce her reps from that 12 count, which is kind of like around the low end of developing endurance. We'll clarify this on the next episode. But she had to change to a rep scheme that was focused on developing strength. And expert opinions are going to vary. But assuming that we're not going really super close to failure, you know, a lot of times the strength repetition range is, you know, some are quoted as 3 to 5, sometimes 5 to 7. It just depends on the expert. And again, we'll clarify all this and I'll give you some guidelines the next time we chat. And since she was wanting to add muscle, but not too much, she had to push herself close to failure with enough working sets through the week to trigger muscle protein synthesis. You need a certain amount of working set volume each week for any given movement or exercise to get your muscles to grow. So in essence, she needed an entirely new program. Really what she needed was a new trainer, but c'est la vie. All right, so I'm going to leave it there. And when we come back in the next episode, we'll finish off this discussion and we'll make sure that we cover concepts of what are the effective repetition ranges if my goal is strength versus hypertrophy versus endurance. Guys, thanks for listening. We'll see you again next time on the Inflammation Nation.
Thanks for listening to Inflammation Nation. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe to our podcast. Be the first to know when a new episode drops so you can stay on top of your game. It also helps others like you find the answers they need. You can use the links in the episode description to check out Dr. Noseworthy's self-learning programs for thyroid, detox, and gut health. Or you can submit a question for the podcast and even reach out to Dr. Noseworthy directly.